On your journey through life, you are the hero. There are times, however, when it is beneficial to have an advisor to guide you along your path. Welcome to the Smart Money Simplified Podcast with Brent Mikosh, Certified Financial Planner, Certified Investment Management Analyst, and co-founder of MP Advisors LLC. In this podcast, Brent discusses some of the most important and interesting topics of the day as they relate to finance, the economy, and beyond. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to Smart Money Simplified with Brent Mikosh. Brent, I'd ask you what's going on, but I know you just got back from an amazing trip.
I did. It was a whirlwind trip. We wanted to, during all the COVID stuff, my wife turned 40, and we had a big trip planned during that period of time, which for a variety of reasons did not occur. But we went to Japan only for about a week because we had to leave our two young kids at home. But it was absolutely fantastic. We had a great time. Got back a couple days ago. Last night's the first night that I got some reasonable sleep, so I'm hoping that my brain is fully functional for this talk today because we got a good one coming.
Yeah, and you have a fantastic guest on the show. Who'd you bring on?
I did. I brought in on Mac Alexander. He's a former Navy SEAL, also founder of Mac Belts. And I think it's fitting today that obviously it's going to be a few weeks before we release this thing, but today is actually June 14th. It's Flag Day. And it's fitting today. I think we have Mac on because he's got a really fantastic story. Not only what he had done with the Navy SEALs in the military, but also coming out of that in the transition into civilian life and entrepreneurship and Mac Belts. And I think we're going to talk about a lot of really cool stuff today. And Mac, really, I from the bottom of my heart, thank you for your service. Thank you for everything you've done for the country. And I believe that entrepreneurship is also one of the great forces for good in the world and that you continue to do for the country and for the economy in the form of Mac Belts now. So I really appreciate you taking some time to speak with me today.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for sharing your audience with me.
Definitely. So let's just kind of start in the beginning, I guess. Take me to how did you end up as a Navy SEAL? We'll start there because it obviously had an impact in terms of you growing the country, or the company from that point.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a young man, I heard about the SEAL teams. I saw the training. I learned about the mission set, right, that those guys were doing and serving my country because I had come from a family of people with military service in their background. I knew I wanted to serve, right? And I love America and I wanted to do my part, right? And so I was about around the time of high school, I learned about the SEAL teams and, I just kind of became obsessed, right? And I worked, trained really hard. And once I got to college, I was 100% sure that being a Navy SEAL is what I wanted to do. So I graduated college, I enlisted and started the pipeline, right? Went to Buds and then checked into a West Coast SEAL team.
Talk a little bit about what Buds was like, because obviously, and anyone from the outside looking in, you've heard stories. You've heard about what a difficult, challenging time that is. If you want to touch on that a little bit, maybe some lessons learned during that time, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I think, Buds is not a letdown. It is the ultimate crucible of selection for the SEAL teams, right? And the guys that are going through that selection and selecting their future teammates are SEALs, right? And so, it's really that beginning of the forging of a warrior, right? And you learn so many amazing lessons in Buds, but that's really when you learn, just the power of teamwork, right? What, teamwork makes the dream work. And you really start to form a bond with your brothers, right? Because Buds is hard. There is an immense amount of suffering, but you're kind of suffering with your brothers, right? And you kind of learn early on that, hey, I look after the buddy to my left and to my right, and they look after me. And we call that 50-50 security. So, there are so many lessons from Buds that you learn that you carry with you really forever. When you go to the SEAL teams, when you go to war, and then when you transition out, right? Still to this day, there are so many great lessons that I reflect on that I learned in Buds.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, just even not only the physical aspect of it, which, obviously you were coming into it physically trained and in fantastic shape, but the mental aspect had to have just been unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely, right? It's very physically taxing, but they push you to your breaking point, right? And that's where you have to dig deep. And that's where you really have to rely on your positive thinking, relying on those around you, right? Your brothers, making sure that you're pulling your share of the weight, right? And so to be a value added member to what you're trying to accomplish, which is to destroy every evolution that's put in front of you, right? And so Buds is extremely competitive. It's very mental, right? And it really comes down to, you know, how do you eat an elephant, right? A lot of people say this is one bite at a time. Buds is just like that, one meal at a time. And then in life, a lot of times it's one meal at a time, even so, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine. The only thing physically, you can't even put it in the same league, but I've done some ultra marathons for a while. And if you're on your feet for, you know, 50 miles plus, it is about, you're not thinking about the end of the race. You're thinking about, I got to get to that next tree, you know, or yeah. Going to get another 5 minutes and I'll take a break. But that had to have been an absolutely incredible experience. So now you graduate, you're a Navy SEAL. Where did you deploy?
Yeah. So I checked into a West Coast SEAL team. We deployed to Northeast Africa and the Arabian Peninsula, working with a high tiered group of special operations forces.
And your position, just looking on the internet here, you were something called a breacher. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So a breacher is somebody who utilizes a variety of tools, right? Explosive tools, mechanical tools to really attack any kind of barrier that's impeding a SEAL team from moving forward, or a SEAL platoon, an assault element from moving forward, right? So my role as a breacher, right, is so if we would come to a door and we couldn't get in, it was my problem to solve, right? And so, you know, there is a, it's a thankless job, right? You're the first guy standing in the door, and then you're also eating a lot of charges. Eating charges means kind of you're absorbing the force of the blast. And, you know, it does have a detrimental effect on people, right? But it's an amazing job, and I loved it.
One of the things I want to touch on real briefly here is the one thing in this country, I think, you know, having been to 50-plus countries myself, there can be the illusion in the United States that there are not some pretty rough characters and rough places in the world. Would you agree with that? I think it's probably safe to assume you would.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is an unfathomable evil that many people have never seen or read about, right? And it exists in certain parts of the world. And, you know, every day there are brave men and women who, you know, go to where that evil is, right? And are a part of the machine that continually crushes it so that it never comes here, right? And I think it exists in places of the world where Delta Airlines is not flying to, right? And so, yeah, that answers your question.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, the one thing I have learned, at least a little bit from some of my own travels, is that veneer of civilization is a lot more thin than people realize it is. And to your point, the men like yourself that went in and were keeping some of that at bay, again, just probably very, to say the least, eye-opening, but also thank you again for doing what you did. Now, you mentioned that your job as a breacher, you're dealing with explosives, you're dealing with I guess the front end, at least, of the SEALs as they're going and trying to penetrate an area. Now, that indirectly, I guess, led to an accident that you had. It wasn't on an actual mission when you were injured. But tell me what occurred there.
Yeah. So my case was I had a series of really bad what the world knows as TBIs, or traumatic brain injuries, right? And so maybe a really serious concussion, right, that some people would know it by. So it was a period of about 2 years where I had some pretty serious accidents. The first one was a Humvee crash, right? A job as a SEAL is very physical, right? We do very high risk training, and there's things that go wrong during those evolutions, right? And so first really bad injury to my brain was in that Humvee accident. And then the second was forward deployed in Africa doing a helicopter exercise off the coast of Africa. And as we were getting picked up by our rotary asset, they ended up on landing. One of the Zodiacs that was on the beach went up in the air. I got hit by the motor, and you know, it messed up my internal wiring pretty bad, to the point where my career as a SEAL was pretty much over, and I was retired from the SEAL teams.
So how if you don't mind diving into it a little bit more, how were you actually injured? How were you hit by a motor? How does that happen?
If you have ever been around a helicopter when it's landing on the ground, right, there's rotary wash, right? So imagine being in a Category 5 hurricane, right, where you have 140 mile per hour winds coming off those rotors, and really anything that's not held down or secured could go up in the air, right? And so as those two helicopters came in to pick me and my unit up, one of those motors went airborne. It was attached to a Zodiac. We had just finished a casting exercise. It caught air and then went up, and I couldn't escape it. And I woke up on a different planet.
Where did you wake up? At what point did you realize what had occurred? Were you still in East Africa when you woke up, or were you already at another location?
Still in East Africa. I, you know, woke up to my medic treating me, pulling glass out of my face, taste of blood in my mouth, and just really not knowing what happened, right? It's hard to describe when you get hit that hard. You don't even feel it. It's a pretty strange phenomenon. And I stayed in country, right? Just because, hey, tough it out, take a couple of days off. But the nature of that injury when I got back to the United States presented more problems than we originally anticipated.
And so you actually continued on for the duration of your mission while you were over there with this injury.
Yeah.
And you said you noticed right away that something was very different. And at what point did you realize that this was not one that you were just going to shake off, like maybe a previous concussion or previous injury you'd had?
Yeah. Well, as I look back and I've reflected on the nature of the events that followed after, right, I wasn't in the right mindset to make any kind of decisions, right? It's when you're the nature of an injury to your brain, there's a lot of things that happen, right? You have personality changes, you have issues with your vision, you have issues with your balance and your gait, and all these weird things that are occurring, emotion regulation. It's a really complex injury, right? Because you can't just look at somebody and see where they're injured, right? Unless there's a serious laceration or scar or blood. But and so the nature of concussions are really detrimental, right? Because your brain controls everything. And so it wasn't until the symptoms of what had happened had continually gotten worse to where I could hide them. Things like constantly having visual issues. You look at your pistol and you see two pistol sights instead of one. There's all kinds of different things that happen. And so it was those things that were making me more of a liability than an asset to the SEAL teams anymore. And I started going into traumatic brain injury therapy and treatment. And, that's still something I do to this day, right?
So did you begin that treatment back in the United States? Like, what did that transition back to the U.S. look like?
Yeah, so came back to the U.S. and, a lot of my teammates urged me to get checked out, be like, hey, man, you're not good. You need to get seen. And so, like most guys, when you seek any kind of help, right, it can be pretty damaging to your career. But unfortunately, that was the path that I had to take just because of the nature of the injury. And so I started going through treatment at Naval Center San Diego Balboa. And it was a full workup, right? Everything to help with, you know, your balance, realigning your eyes with vestibular therapy. You can get hit so hard that your eyes can literally shift in your skull and creates visual issues. So, you know, it's a complicated injury, right? Because in the nature of modern medicine, it's hard to treat brain injuries because each one affects somebody differently, right? And so for me, it was all about just continually to find what works, find what helps, with that emotion regulation piece, with your balance, paddleboarding, things like that. And so that was really what became my new mission, right? Was how do I become the man that I was before the injury so that I could return to my unit, right? That was the big carrot for me. But unfortunately, you have a certain amount of time that you have to recover. And so for me, I didn't have that. So I was retired early, right into COVID-19, which was a pretty troubling time to go and look for a job and a new career.
So when was that? Obviously 2020, but at what point were you retired?
Yeah, so I retired in August of 2020. And then it was, you kind of start the transition piece earlier, right? So even though your day of exit is maybe, let's say, you start 6 months before that. So I was still not doing well, right? I still had really terrible speech issues because that was one of the biggest things that was affected. And so I was in physical therapy full time. And then I was also trying to go get a job, right? And this was at a time where nobody was hiring. And it was a huge shock to my ego, right? I knew I was injured and I had these things, but I was hoping people could look past that, right? To be like, hey, you know, this guy, he was a Navy SEAL. He had a great reputation in the SEAL teams. And now he's due to injury while in service, you're forced to find a new career, right? But just the nature of the chaos and the hysteria that was going on at the time, I couldn't really sell myself as, you know, somebody that they wanted to be a part of their team. And so there I was, a retired SEAL, right? And I couldn't find a job. And it was a hard thing to swallow for me, right? Because I felt like I had invested in the linear path to success of like, hey, I'm desirable to be a part of any team. But, COVID-19 made that hard, I think, for a lot of people.
But I also think that you had this goal from the time you said you were younger to become a SEAL. You achieved that goal. To a certain extent, there had to have been a feeling that it was taken from you. And just from my own perspective, in my past life, I was a specialist trader down the NYSE on the floor of the stock exchange, and I left voluntarily. But until I did that, I didn't realize how much a part of my own identity was taken up by this, this Wall Street trading job that I had at the time. And it was hard for me without having to deal with an injury and something, again, that you felt might have been taken from you. How was that from an ego perspective to accept the fact that now you're no longer a SEAL?
Yeah. So, no matter what, forever, I'll always be a frogman, right? I'll always be a SEAL. But for me, right, it was my purpose and my paycheck came in one uniform, right? And so there was so much of that that was hard to swallow. I was very bitter. I was very angry for a long time. I blamed pretty much everybody else around me for I wasn't taking accountability, right? And it was kind of like, and when there's a revenge factor there, right? When you lose your friends or or see that evil that exists out there and you're part of the machine that crushes it, it's hard to ever replace that. And I don't think I ever will, right? I try to really now I find my purpose in sharing my story and being a husband and a father and those kinds of things. But it's hard, right? I mean, especially as a young man, full of so much, kind of piss and vinegar, so to speak, right? I wanted to get back out there and I wanted to, really be a part of the machine that crushes this evil. And, unfortunately, like you said, just due to the physical health being compromised in the way that it was, I mean, it was a huge, huge setback, man. And for me, I didn't see anything worth pursuing on this side in the civilian life, right? I didn't see anything that was really allowed me to find that purpose again. And whether it was mental health or those kinds of things, I really struggled with my desire to wanting to continue, right? And that was something I battled with for a long time just because I felt like I had let people down, right? I felt like I had let my brothers down and anyways, eventually I shifted to, hey, how do I feel grateful with where I am, right? How do I feel grateful with the fact that I wasn't killed on that operation? How do I feel grateful with the fact that I have all these so many blessings around me? And, for me, it was, reestablishing the foundation of my faith, right? My identity in Jesus versus my identity in being a Navy SEAL.
Did you have that faith prior to joining the SEALs? Because you've been pretty open and public about that, at least on your LinkedIn posts.
Yeah, so I grew up in the South, right? Like most people who grew up in the South, everybody's a Christian, right? They go to church on Sunday, but lead totally different lives 6 days a week. I didn't really want anything to do with Christian beliefs or values, right? And it was because I associated Jesus's life with the people who were presenting the gospel to me, right? And so when I was younger, I kind of fled from anything that had to do with the gospel message, right? But, that shift for me started when I was overseas going on operations where like, hey, man, you could get killed tonight or you could get killed on this operation. Like, what is your what happens next, right? So you go, what happens after you die? And I kind of had a little bit of Bible Belt gospel in me, but as I really started to draw closer to God was in those times of, you know, uncertainty and fear, right? And I think it's amazing how that works, right? When we, whether you're on a sick bed or you're getting a diagnosis or you go through tragedy or some level of trauma, for some people, you can either become angry at God for the circumstance or you can become, grow closer to God in that. And so for me, I probably was more of angry at God, right? And so, but I continued to go downhill, right? So I retired from the teams and COVID-19 in the world. And it was weird. It felt like to me that whether it was big media or something, but America was like being perceived as this like evil, racist, terrible place. Right. And it was hard because I was like, man, like my friends have died for this country. Right. I've carried and stood watch over service members that gave everything for this country. So why could you say that? Right. And so, yeah. Anyway, going on a tangent, but it was just hard. There was like that void. And you know, and it wasn't until I continued to kind of go down and everything I touched still just was destroyed, right? I burned all my bridges, destroyed my relationships with people just because I was so angry. And it wasn't until I reached like the rock of rock bottoms, right? Where I was really saying, hey, like, I'm totally giving up on my own understanding and I'm giving everything to God. And since that day, my life has totally changed, right? And that's probably why I'm still here.
What did that moment look like?
I was on a lot of pills, right? That's kind of how they treat the nature of traumatic brain injury and PTS, whatever. And I was on a lot of pills, right? And I was essentially pill addicted every morning as a 27, 28 year old man. I popped a prescription bottle, right? This pill's for this pill's for that. I had totally isolated myself from all of my family, all of my friends, anybody who tried to love me, anybody who tried to help me. I was, you know, kind of pushed them away and I was just still isolating. I mismanaged my finances. I'd come through a terrible divorce, lost absolutely everything, my house, custody of my daughter. Just, it was a total show, right? Nowhere to go, living in the back of my truck, right? That's where I was. So 2 years ago, I was running support for tier one operations. Now I'm driving around every night looking for a dark place to park so I could get a good night's sleep, right? And that for me was rock bottom. I was drinking a lot. And by the world standards, I was a failure, right? And I was, you know, a homeless veteran. I wasn't on the street with a cardboard box or a cardboard sign. But I was literally living out of my truck and I didn't think it was really that bad of a situation just because the nature of being a service member, you kind of always think like, hey, it's always all good, right? You never really wallow or do any of those things. You just kind of do the best you can with what you have. And so that was what it looked like for me, right? No money, nobody in my life, no purpose, no passion for anything. And just continuing to just use, you know, alcohol and pills to numb my perception of life.
And we talk in summer of 2020 here?
No, so that would have probably been around 2021.
Early 2021. And yeah, as an aside, I think, you know, you mentioned that summer of 2020, the nation obviously had just come through and was still dealing with COVID. I'll just say from my perspective, when all the cities were burning and everything that summer, that was heartbreaking to me because anybody that's read some history, every society, every nation has its flaws and things that it works out. But to see what was being said for me as a civilian, having not served my country and not being injured serving my country was heartbreaking. So I can't imagine what it was for someone that had the experiences that you had had. So again, you know, it was just, it must have been an incredibly difficult time. So you're now in 2021, you hit this point where, if you want to call it rock bottom, then what happens?
Yeah. So, you know, at this time I was still trying to find a job, looking for employment just because I was, you know, broke and everything was still a wreck, right? My speech was still pretty terrible. And some of that could have also been caused by how medications were interacting with me, right? But so I was shopping at a thrift store and I saw, and I was still working with charities, right? So I was in the pipeline, you know, I was kind of trying everything like, hey, my life is really a wreck. I need to change some things. So So I was put in a pipeline for a service dog, and service dog ended up washing out. But I was looking for like a leather dog or like a leather collar, right, that would make that Malinois that I was going to get look kind of like the dog that I worked with in the teams and had gone on operations with. And so, I was kind of like, backstory, I was going to all these different pet stores at the time looking for like, oh, you know, it was something that was like looking forward to, right? Like this dog coming into my life that was going to help me or whatever. And so I was at this thrift store by chance, you know, had nothing to do with the dog. And I saw like this old leather belt on a rack, right, for a dollar. And I looked at that, and for some reason I got this like idea that, man, that's looks exactly like the dog collar that I would want, or the material for the dog collar I would build, right? And so I bought that old leather belt for like a dollar, right? I cleaned it up really good, and I tacked little new leather work holes in there and put new hardware on it. And you know, and I looked at it, I was like, wow, like this looks really cool. This is a cool product. And I was like, the nature of whatever, I was like, man, maybe I could sell that. I took a photo of it on social media and put it out there. And so, you know, I originally had bought this leather belt for a dollar, put new hardware on it, and then I sold it for like $45. And I'm like, light bulb.
Pretty good markup.
Yeah. But, you know, and it's hard to, you know, because there's a certain amount of time you put in cleaning it up and doing all these things. But the thing was, is that like, it felt good. You know what I mean? Like I've never been an artist. I've never been an artistic person. But it was, you know, it was like creating something that like really brought me a sense of peace. Right. And for me, I've always been somebody who was like, hey, if it feels good, like a little bit, like let's go all in. Right. And so it was essentially from that light bulb moment that I went to every thrift store around, and I was like buying up all these old leather belts. I'd go into Goodwill, Salvation Army, all of the thrift stores, to the point where these guys I was on a first name basis with, right? They're like, oh, hey, that's that crazy veteran guy that turns them into dog collars. So they would save me these belts that I would turn into dog collars, right? And at that point, I was kind of like, now I was an entrepreneur, right? When in reality, it just felt like an arts and crafts project, right? And that never really felt like work. And then, you know, I started selling those, and my whole goal was to create a you know, repurpose. So when you buy something from Salvation Army, portion of those proceeds goes to help the Salvation Army mission, right? And then if you, or Goodwill or wherever thrift store, if they're backed by some type of religious organization. But yeah, we were, I was going around buying those up and selling them as dog collars. And then I would donate a portion of those proceeds back to the charities that helped me, right? Because I did a lot of treatments, a lot of things, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, different types of nerve blocks, all these things that really aren't covered by my, you know, VA healthcare or whatever. I was going, and a lot of nonprofits were helping provide these essentially life-saving treatments for veterans, right? So I wanted to pay them back. So yeah, that's how the company originally started, as Delta Canis, and I was selling dog collars. A big portion of the proceeds went to the charities to pay back for what they had done for me. And then one of my buddies who's in the SEAL teams, he said, hey man, can you make me a belt? I was like, well, sure. And so when he asked me that, it kind of like made me feel like, here I am in this position. I can give my teammate something that he can use, right? And that's where I felt a part of it again. And then, you know, I took a picture of the belt I had built him, put it on the website, sold $1,000 worth of that belt, right? And that's where I was like, holy smokes, I think I'm going to become a belt company. And then from there, it's just been slowly adapting and evolving. And now I've sold thousands of belts, and it's just this cool thing, man.
So how did you put, I've actually got one of your belts here, and this thing is like
tank.
Oh man, it's a tank. I mean, it's unbelievable. And if you're, you know, and for me, I go out in the woods a lot. If I'm out in the woods, sometimes I'll have a pistol with me. This thing is not going to sag. it's a serious piece of gear. Take me the evolution of dog collars to this, in terms of, you know, the thickness of the leather you've got, the, again, and if you're seeing this or listening to this, you're not really understanding what a serious piece of gear this thing is, particularly the buckle and the entire belt. So how did you design this thing?
So it's kind of funny, right? So as a breacher, one of the things that you do is you build charges, right? And you build charges, you know, they got to be perfect and they got to be able to withstand long operational cycles, because you'll build a charge and then it'll be with you or your unit, or a guy will carry that for weeks and months. So I was really dedicated to the quality, right? So if I was going to build something, it had to be the best, right? And when I think of in terms of like, hey, what does it mean to be the best? I think of it has to be the toughest, right? And so in order for a product, especially like a leather belt, to be the toughest, it has to be unbreakable, right? And so I looked at how were belts being built, right? And the, that everybody kind of knew. And I just kind of thought, well, if I was going to break this thing, where would I break it? Well, the first thing, the cheap, soft pleather, right, that's made in China, I would rip that in half, right? So, okay, we got to upgrade the leather. Okay, the second thing is the buckle. Can I put this thing in a vise and break it? Most buckles on the market are cheap aluminum, brass, soft metals, also made in China. You can buy them online for 25 cents, right? So I was like, okay, we got to build our own buckles, and it has to be made from something unbreakable. For me, American steel, it's the coolest thing out there. So got to build a buckle with American steel, right? And so in other things like swapping out screws instead of rivets, right? We use steel screws instead of rivets, right? And it was really about just, you know, build something that's going to last, so people don't have to keep buying something over and over and over and over again. And I think in the world, in the day, in the market in which we live, so much of the things that we consume are produced in China or produced overseas, and the quality, they really suck, right? And so that's kind of what led to, you know, what I call the unbreakable design, where, you know, we use a, you know, a D-ring rather than a leather stay, right? You have one of our, you know, belts that is more traditional style, but it was really about how do I make a belt and make it a multi-purpose tool, right? Something that you can use in more ways than just keeping your pants up, right? And coming from being a Navy SEAL, good, I know what is expected of good gear, right? Good gear has to be able to withstand stress, which means it has to withstand time. And depending on the individual during that time, they're going to be in a variety of weather conditions, climates, and those kinds of things. And so that was really how the product and the the design and the engineering of the belt really started to set itself apart from what was on the market. And I believe that's what's allowed us to grow in the way that we have.
But you got to, you know, I'm thinking just from a, not knowing anything about belts, but as a business person here, you know, you got to source this stuff. You know, you can't just do this. Maybe you can do it in your garage, I don't know. But I mean, what was the process like as somebody that didn't come from this background of making belts or making something? How'd you find vendors? How'd you find your leather vendors? How'd you find, you know, the source vendors for the steel that you're using for your buckle? How'd you put your own supply chain together? And I know it's important for you to do it in the United States. How hard was that to do?
Yeah, so incredibly difficult. And that's hopefully eventually will lead in talking about some of these other things. But if you are an American entrepreneur and you want to start any kind of product manufacturing or anything where you're engineering something out of parts, I mean, it is so impossible to find American made parts. It's so, almost everybody is just a distributor of overseas foreign made crap. And so for me, it started as being a veteran, a patriot, somebody who loves this country, is going to put this country first. When I started, you know, learning about, hey, okay, what are my options first, right? It's kind of in analyzing kind of the battlefield, so to speak. You know, what are my options available to me? And, you know, what's that price point, right? Because everybody loves to buy cheap, sell high. But if you're going to build something and derive it based around quality, you know, you're going to have to pay more on, and that's just the nature of the beast. So, I just kind of, you know, a lot of research, a lot of talking with experts, a lot of mentorship, finding kind of who to do the what, and seeing, hey, you know, hey, what do you know? Because so much of this knowledge, you can't find it on the internet, right? For whatever reason, right? You can't just Google, you know, if you Google American made anything, it just hits you with whatever the algorithm is that pays them the most to populate in your search feed. So, it was just really kind of sampling and testing. That's really what it's always been about. Find somebody who says they do something, you know, we'll get it, we'll try it out, we'll put it to the test and see if it's legit. And so that's kind of been the process for me. And yeah, building a team, right? One man is no man, so to speak. So if you're going to try to do something on your own, good luck with that. Lone wolf mentality, you will starve. But so I kind of just really just kind of went with that approach, right? Found somebody who had already done something, somebody I really look up to is a guy named Eli Crane. He started Bottle Breacher. He's now in the House of Representatives. Great dude, great entrepreneur. And so it was kind of like learning how he did things kind of at a distance where I was like, man, that's the kind of guy I want to be like. That's the brand I want to be like. And so, cool, right? Check. I know what I got to do.
So how did you, once you start putting these products together, how'd you market it? Because you can make the best thing in the world, but if nobody buys it, how'd you get your message out there?
Yeah, so a big part of the message was I used LinkedIn as kind of like a sales channel, right? And I don't think a lot of people were really doing that. Everybody is kind of trying to make themselves look good on paper and kind of be kind of, I don't know, part of the club, right? You know, MBA, this, that, whatever. And so for me, I really started talking about my own story as a SEAL. What were the trials that I had faced with? And what was this new thing of leathercraft that had brought me peace? And what was the mission behind the product? And then how was the product built, right? And so I started marketing heavily on LinkedIn. I was doing a lot of marketing on Facebook and Instagram at the time. Those algorithms, whatever it is, you have to pay a lot, right? And they don't want to help conservative, especially Christian-based value companies spread their reach, right? That's just a fact. And so LinkedIn was kind of like, at the time, I felt this untainted group of target people, right? If I could find and target people that, because Instagram's flooded, Facebook's flooded with all kinds of users. You don't really even know who you're getting to, right? But for me, the criteria, I was hitting people between ages, 20 to 45 who were trying, or even older, who were trying to advance their career. These were people who wore fancy clothes, dress clothes, those kinds of things for the job that which they were working in. And so for me, it was like, man, I can go right to the people, conservative people, right? People that, want to support veterans, and I can target them through LinkedIn. And so I was really originally not really trying to sell a product, right? I was really just trying to tell my story to help people, right? Like, hey, I know I'm not the last guy. There's a ton of veterans that are maybe struggling out there. If I can give them a little piece of wisdom or whatever from my story, it could shed new light on what they're going through. And then it just so happened that kind of really catapulted the business forward and people wanting to support me, which has been an amazing thing. And then, I just took all the earnings and just reinvested back into the business. And now I'm talking here with you.
Now, when did you really start to see your sales take off? Was there a moment where you're like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to talk like this, but it was a post that went viral, right? That reached like 5.5 million people. That's when my sales took off. It was insane. It was building the parachute on the way down. It was me and a small group of people grinding it out 7 days a week, 16 hours a day, building belts. And it was overwhelming, right? From a marketing standpoint, to pack, what would somebody be willing to pay to bring in that much traffic, right? It would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that kind of exposure. And I believe it was a blessing, right? It was a total gift from God that allowed me to have those moments of virality, right? And I capitalized it on the only way that I thought was right. So I had that initial couple of viral posts. I was reaching, millions and millions and millions of people. And then I said, what I really care most about is not selling belts. What I really care most about is offering hope to the broken, right? And I used that moment of virality, that little window I had to kind of preach the gospel message, right? To preach the fact that 2023 years ago, Jesus Christ, walked this earth, right? This man did something that was so incredible. The whole world is telling time by him. And there's so much restorative hope in putting your identity in Jesus, not in the church and the people who presented the gospel to you in your previous experiences, but really what happens if you develop an authentic relationship with Jesus Christ? And so I use that, right? I use that moment of virality to spread the gospel message. And, you know, I would do it again in a heartbeat, but everybody else told me not to.
I think I read a post that you mentioned about that. So did you see traffic decline? Did you see a positive or negative impact from how openly you came out and professed your faith?
Yeah, so it was about a 60% reduction in sales. Really? And, the Bible talks about that, right? I may have lost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in doing so, but, you know, what I care more, I would rather save just one person or help one person find restorative hope in Jesus than $1 million, right? Because that kind of thing is what keeps families together. That's kind of thing what keeps people alive, right? And it gives them purpose and value again. And so it was funny because when all this Bud Light, you know, trans stuff was coming out and all the different companies that are just going with that kind of agenda, they're like, oh, we're down 30%. I'm like, well, I talked about Jesus and I had 60% reduction. So like, hey, high five for not losing everything. But in reality, man, it was really just, I've already accomplished everything that I set out to do, Brent. And I just really, what I care most about is offering people hope, right? If I were to get off this podcast and walk out this door and, you know, and get hit by a truck, like what would be the life and the legacy that I leave behind? And in reality, my identity is in Jesus Christ, not Mac Belts, not as a Navy SEAL. And that's what I work towards every day. And we'll see how it goes, man.
Well, I will say this. So the Bible mentions money and finances over 2,000 times. So I think that, you know, as in my travels around the world, I think that there are unifying things for not obviously, not just the West, but around the world. Faith, religion for sure is a unifying thing. The marketplace also is. I'm a big advocate for that. I think that if you have the freedom and the ability to take an idea and present it to the world in a marketplace of ideas or other products where people then get to make their decision in terms of whether, you know, who they're going to do business with and what they want to support. That's awesome. That's fantastic. And I think that there's a powerful message in that. And my own personal belief system is all money is and all businesses is this idea there's a separation between you and your business. I don't believe that. I think it's a part of who you are. And money is not good or bad. It's an amplifier. Money is going to allow you to, I guess, leverage out a lot of good things you want to do. It also has the ability to lead you right into destruction. You know, it can do both. It's just energy. It's like electricity. How are you going to use it? And I think that I think you know, being out there in an entrepreneurial space, it's an extension of you. And the fact that people are buying your belts, obviously they're buying a heck of a product, but I think they're also doing it because they like the story. People like stories behind things. They want to know they've got values and causes that they want to support. But since that point, you mentioned you had a sales hit there. Have things kind of leveled off? And what is going to be the future now of Mac Belts? Where are you going to take it from here?
Yeah, so we have a couple exciting things that are coming down the pipe. You know, I can't really talk about them right now, but hopefully maybe you guys will see us on your TV here soon. So we'll be going through that avenue, kind of seeing, you know, what comes of it, right? We make the best belts in the world. We're going to continue doing that. We're going to continue to put America first. We're going to continue to hire veterans and give them meaningful employment, working with their hands. And we're going to continue to fight kind of this woke agenda that's being pushed on everybody. And we're going to do that one belt at a time. And, that's kind of moving forward, what kind of you can expect from Mac Belts.
How many veterans are you employing now, directly or indirectly?
Yeah, so we've got about four guys that are working for us now. And a lot of these guys are in, you know, remote locations, maybe doing, you know, we just brought on a really incredible creative team, Later Skater Productions. So if you guys are seeing some of our new videos that we're doing, it's those guys. It's a former MARSOC Raider, a bunch of Army and Marine vets, and they produce some of the most hilarious, creative content. And, and that's really, for me, where this thing has come full circle, where when I have, like you said, money is energy. When I have, and for me, I've really kind of stayed on the whole, Mac Belts has only really been going for about 2 years, right? And every dollar I've ever earned, I invest back into it. I take nothing, pay myself nothing. And but it's to the point where like I can now hire my friends and guys that I really care for to do what they love in the space that they love. And that's like one of the greatest, most enjoyable and rewarding experiences I've had with this company, right? Is not only providing an American made product that people love, but, you know, helping my brothers and sisters just go on their own journeys and what they love. And I'm just so proud and thankful that I can do that.
So two final questions for you is first, if people want to buy one of these belts, how do they find you? How do they buy one?
Yeah, so you can go to www.macbelts.com, and we have some really amazing belts. One of the things that makes our product different is we make our own buckles, right? We make our own buckles on American machine, right? So everything from thread that we use to the leather that we use to the buckles and the hardware is made right here in the USA. No outsourcing, no robotics, sewing, none of that stuff.
Awesome. And now if any veterans have been listening to this and they've heard a little bit of your experience, and maybe there's been some viral posts on LinkedIn lately, some vets that are having a hard time. What's your message to them in terms of trying to help them get through it?
Yeah, I would say, you know, follow your heart, but rely on the people who love you in your life that are trying to help you, right? And take that help. I have this saying that, you know, suffering in silence only applies to push-ups, nothing else in life, right? And in the SEAL teams or in any, you know, combat role, law enforcement officers, first responders, we solve some of the most complex problems in the world that our country gives us as a team, right? So don't go, this next problem that you may be facing in your life, don't go out alone, right? There's people there who want to help you. Pick up the phone. So many of the things that we've done or I did were self-imposed, right? If I could have just sent that text message or picked up that phone, right? I didn't have to be in that situation that I was in. Just to sum that up, right? Like lean on the people who love you, bounce how you're feeling off of them, and just realize, you know, corny as it sounds, like you're not alone, right? And people love you and people want you, you know, to do well, right? Because, but solve your problems as a same way you did in whatever service you were in, right? As a team, solve these problems as a team, because we don't work well alone.
Mac, I really want to thank you for taking some time out of your day to speak with me. And again, being so open and honest, sharing your personal story. I will definitely vouch for the quality of your product. It's beyond, when this thing arrives, anyone that buys one, I would encourage anybody that needs a heck of a belt to do it. You will definitely, you're getting more than your money's worth for sure. But thank you. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me and for sharing your story and the story of Mac Belts.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Thank you so much.
Guys, this has been fantastic. Mac, I'm telling you, while you guys were talking, I'm browsing this website, and some of these belts are just gorgeous. I mean, if that's the proper word for it, I mean, that I'm looking at the, now there's ones that sold out, so we'll talk about that later, but the Gladiator, I think, is a great looking belt. And then there's another one called the Governor. Oh, I mean, obviously I'm looking at black belts, but man, the quality just looks phenomenal. So Brent, I can tell by the smile on your face and you held it up. You're like, man, this is crazy. And just looking at some of the descriptions, like this is, you know, brake strength of 1500 pounds. If I need to hang from a crane with this thing, I'm not quite that weight. So I'm feeling pretty safe. So Mac, I wish you the best of luck. I'll be praying for your success as well. This is awesome. Brent, of course, thank you for bringing on another amazing guest. And our last thank you will go to you, the listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Smart Money Simplified podcast with Brent Mikosh. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Brent comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. We humbly ask that you share this podcast, rate it, and leave a review, as this actually does help others find the show. Again, thank you so much for listening today. For everyone at MP Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Smart Money Simplified Podcast. Have any questions about topics covered during the show? Visit www.smartmoneysimplified.com or give us a call at 602-255-0555. Don't forget to click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the hosts and/or guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional financial advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service providers with any questions you may have regarding your individual situation. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated, MP Advisors, LLC, is not a broker/dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.